Thanks, Michael. When I first thought about presenting on this topic, I thought, well, it's going to be quite straightforward. And I think the more I read and the more I looked at the individual cases, I came to the conclusion that essentially there's no set formula. And those of you who deal with children's cases are probably well aware that each case has to be looked at on its merits. One thing, however, that I think there has been a shift in is that with the, I suppose, not so recent amendments to the family law legislation, the requirement that the children spend significant and substantial time with each parent, perhaps the issue of relocation has become more difficult. And I don't know whether any of you noticed around about the 15th or 16th of February in what we call the, I suppose, the People's Daily, the Herald Sun, there was an article where it was two-pronged. One, it was involving a same-sex couple and then also relocation. And in that case, and it's an unreported case of Justice Cronin, which I've contacted the associate to obtain a copy of the reasons for decisions, the mother of the biological mother of I think the child was 4 years old, has been prevented from relocating interstate for a year and a half until the child is 5.5 years of age. The article has only gave very brief reasons, one of them being the strength of the relationship with the, I suppose, the second mother and her older sibling. Now, the distance was not great for which the child was to move. There were no, it appeared from the article and also in a lot of the cases that I've read, often there are cases of no extreme circumstances such as domestic violence, drug abuse, nothing that you can actually say, well, one position is preferred over the other. Now, the relocation cases, I think, probably can be called the San Andreas fault of children's cases, and in many cases they'd be regarded as a lose-lose situation. The overriding principle to be applied, as you're all aware, in children's cases generally, is what's in the best interest of the child. That, however, has to be read into the child having a meaningful relationship with both parents, significant and substantial time, as well as the parents' freedom of movement. And that overriding principle that parties should be able to move and get on with their lives, repartner, move interstate, etc. Now, there are three things that I say that has come to mind after reading quite a lot of the cases, is that it may not even be very helpful in dealing with the individual cases that you have. The first is that each case is determined on its unique facts and the judges must consider the best interests of the individual children in each case. Well, that really goes without saying. Second is that there seems to be no particular pattern at all that can be relied on to predict a decision. Therefore, it makes no sense to go to court believing that a particular outcome is certain. And I think in relocations that may well often be the case. Parties get a job offer and they think, oh, well, that's a significant increase in pay, significant increase in lifestyle standards, and that they can offer much more to the child and they will be happier and therefore parent more effectively. I don't think that can be really relied on. It should be attached a certain abundance of caution in relying on factors such as that. I think that there needs to be much more overriding principle and overriding benefits and benefits to the child long term. The other matter is that an appeal court may be comprised of judges who will have decided a matter differently at the first hearing and who may indeed believe that the lower court's decision is an awful one, but they can't overturn a decision unless there's been an error of law. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Now, I won't go through all the cases, but I think some of them throw up, especially the High Court considered the issues of relocation in AMS against AIF and AIF against AMS, and the citations, etc., will be included in the paper. Number one, Kirby J said in his judgment, each relocation is unique. No single factor will be dispositive in a relocation. Although the child's concerned welfare is the paramount consideration, it is not the only consideration of the court. Accordingly, the court cannot ignore the legitimate expectation of a parent that he or she should be free to live how and where he or she chooses in the future. There is no universal law rule that requires separated parents live in close proximity with one another to ensure that their children will have the optimal relationship with both parents. And then democratic societies, for obvious reasons, play a high store on the entitlements of adults to decide where they will live. Accordingly, courts are reluctant to interfere with a parent's right to freedom of movement, particularly if that parent is the unchallenged custodian of the child concerned. Interference by court order in the life of such a parent may lead to resentment on that parent's part, which of itself is likely to have a negative implications for the child concerned. However, the touchstone remains the best interest of the child concerned and not the wishes and interests of the parents. One of the primary functions of the family law legislation is to provide mechanisms for separated spouses to begin new life for themselves independently of their former partners. Accordingly, any legislative rule regarding the right of a child to maintain frequent and direct relations with both parents cannot be interpreted as an absolute one. Courts in Australia have a more relaxed attitude to relocations within Australia compared to overseas. Well, I think that's probably fairly obvious. Because of the available of reliable transport and telecommunications facilities within Australia and because of the homogeneity of the social and cultural factors in this country. It's not like moving from certain parts, perhaps in Asia or in the Middle East, where there's huge cultural differences or huge political differences. When considering a relocation application, the court will be required to assess the adequacy of new contact arrangements for the other parent concerned, and particularly whether those arrangements are in the child's best interests. The court retains the discretion to depart from the norm of shared parental responsibility in the appropriate cases. Now, that is probably sums it all up, and there's probably factors you're all very aware of in the cases that you've dealt with, not just in relocation cases, but in cases where it's a question of with whom each child may live or how much time a child spends with a particular parent. Now, the other thing is, sometimes it's totally forgotten, and this goes across the board with all types of children cases, that it's not... the court's not bound to determine whether it prefers one parent's proposal against the others. It can come up with an alternative arrangement. Now, there's a case that I'll refer to at the end of this little talk, which is really quite an ordinary case. And I imagine that probably the more difficult cases to deal with are those where they are ordinary, where the parents have a reasonable relationship with the child, without any significant problems, where there aren't drug problems, there aren't mental issues. I'd say the common or garden cases where, through whatever reason, either repartnering, moving near relatives, etc., that the child is to be taken and, as a consequence, in practical terms, will spend less time with the other parent. Now, the... Act doesn't define the definition of meaningful, nor does it provide any specific criteria to assess how parents either have or should have a meaningful relationship in the child's life. And it doesn't even give any interpretation to the phrase meaningful. And I think this is one of the significant things in the relocation cases, that it is the meaningfulness of the relationship rather than the length of time, rather than the it's the quality rather than the quantity. And I think that, again, goes through all the cases, not just relocation cases. The shorter off, the Macquarie Dictionary says, full of meaning, significant. Well, that doesn't really help us any further. Importance of consequence, and neither does that. The shorter off, Oxford Dictionary defines meaningful as full of meaning or expression, significant, having, conveying a meaning, expressive, etc., etc. So really we don't even get any real indication from the legislation of what would be a meaningful relationship. Again, the court does not purport to prescribe how the meaningful relationship is best promoted in circumstances of any case, and therefore really leaves it very much up in the air still as to what arrangements can be put in place for that meaningful relationship to be promoted. I was talking to David List in a totally different matter, a Dolly Incompax matter down at the Children's Court, and criminal matter. He'd just finished giving evidence in up in the family court on a relocation case. And I said to him, oh, well, of course, you know, if the mother can't move, then her ability to parent will be significantly affected. She's suffering from depression, all the rest. And he says, oh, you've basically read my report. And I said, no, it's common sense. And then I flippantly went on to say, I'm afraid, oh, well, does it really matter? It's a lot easier now with Skype and things like that to have a meaningful relationship with your child interstate or overseas. And he turned to me and I felt very embarrassed and he said, would you like to communicate with your child only by that? And I suppose the reverse goes with children. Forgetting what the parents' relationship is, despite all the modern technology to foster a better relationship or communication, that's the thing that I think to keep in mind, the meaningfulness of it, the way it can be fostered. Anyway, now, in it's a meaningful relationship, not an optimal one, i.e. there may be circumstances which would be perfect, parents living down the road, around the corner, see each other, ride the bike to dad's place, mum's place, that perhaps would be the optimal relationship. But then again, that it, we don't live in a perfect world, people have to get on with their lives. And again, what may be best or optimal in a perfect set of circumstances does not necessarily mean meaningful. And that's discussed by Bennett J in G and C, which is a decision 2006 of the Family Court. And they said that there are three ways that perhaps an inquiry into a relationship could be regarded. And that's, there are three possible interpretations of section 60 capital CC2A. One interpretation is that the legislation requires a court to consider the benefit the child of having a meaning relationship with both of the parents by examination of evidence of the nature of the child's relationship at the date of the hearing to make findings based on that evidence, which findings will reflect in the orders ultimately made. And that's referred to as the present relationship approach. Secondly, there is a second interpretation in that the legislation intended that a court should assume that there is a benefit to all children in having a meaning relationship with both of the parents, the presumptive approach. And the third is that the court should consider and weigh the evidence at the date of the hearing and determine how, if it is in the child's best interests, orders can be framed to ensure the particular child has a meaningful relationship with both parents, the prospective approach. And in that case, it was concluded that the preferred option is the prospective approach, looking, okay, what in the future, how can that relationship be maintained in practical terms? Now, I'll take you to a case that was decided this year. It's a Sydney case, and it's not particularly remarkable, as I said, in any way. And it was the main reason I chose it was because it's recent, and I wanted to see whether there's anything absolutely startling that would, be of any great help. And in a way, it doesn't help. It highlights some of the difficulties, but it's got a couple of surprising factors. It was delivered on the 13th of January 2011 in Sydney. It's a judgment of Justice Fowler. It was heard 6th and 7th of December, and it's Kershaw on trial, 2011, Family Court of Appeal 7. This case, the parents had equal shared responsibility. The child was, I think, 7 years of age. And the mother wanted to relocate from Sydney to Canberra. So it's not a huge difference. It's not from Perth to Melbourne or anything like that. She wanted the child to stay with the father during school time, during term time, week one, after school Monday to before school on after school on Friday to before school on Monday, and during school holidays, etc. Now, neither parent sought an order for sole parental responsibility, so they're getting on quite well. She wanted to report, the mother wanted to relocate from Sydney to Canberra, mainly for additional support from her family and to provide a better environment. There's no details in the case what this really better environment was. It might have been less cosmopolitan or whatever, but certainly that the main reason was to get support from extended maternal family. Her position was that that relocation would not deprive the child of a meaningful relationship with the father. She was even prepared, and I thought this was one of the perhaps more unusual cases, she was even prepared to pay for the accommodation for the father and child in Canberra, for aeroplane flights so the child could come to Sydney and see the father should he choose to remain living in Sydney. So that's, I think, in my experience, quite unusual. Often neither party can really afford it and it becomes quite difficult, or it's the party wanting the child to spend time with them in the original location that has to fork out the mother money, often the father with being a higher income earner. And the father was seeking an order for equal time and obviously equal shared parental responsible. He had gone off to Italy for a short period of time when the child was younger, and then reconnected with the family and indicated to the court that he realised that that was not probably the best thing to do, and it was disruptive and it impeded his relationship with the child initially. And there were some minor, and I would say fairly minor, behavioural problems with the child. On reading it, it sounded pretty much like my own home situation with my kids. They were a bit cheeky. She was cheeky and it was answering her back to her mother and things like that. But anyway, the psychologist, Dr. L, gave evidence and indicated that with this child, whilst there weren't significant psychiatric or psychological problems, stability was very important for her. And another thing that was quite interesting, that although she had a primary attachment to her mother, indicated that she also had a very good attachment to her father, one of the arguments mounted was that the increased time and support with the maternal aunt and mother would damage or deplete the relationship with the father. So it was a question, I thought that was quite surprising that that argument was mounted. The court didn't really address that in any great detail, but it certainly took it into consideration. Now, the independent children's lawyer opposed the relocation and sought that the parties have equal shared parental responsibility and that the child live with the mother, spend time with the father on special days, have a timetable and have week one after school on Friday to before school on Monday and week two Wednesday night to Thursday. And there were orders sought in relation to facilitating contact with Skype, and the rest. There were some issues of credit, but essentially both parties maybe exaggerated or bended the truth a little, but they both came out as being good, loving parents with no significant problems. And the upshot of the case was that it was determined Dr. L concluded at this point that S is a young girl who simply wants to have time with her father on a regular basis and seems quite comfortable living with her mother. So again, there was nothing startling about any parent to be preferred over the other. But the court went on to say, paragraph 89, I accept, however, the evidence given that after spending a holiday in Canberra, the child expressed a desire to live there. It seems to the court that the child's predominant views are that she wishes to continue her relationship with each of her parents. It does not seem to the court that her expressions of view about living in Canberra should be given weight, except to the extent that they reflect that the child had a good time there. And I think that's often the case, that one parent takes someone to show them the new location and it's all exciting and terrific, and they then side with that parent's desire to move. And the court goes on to say, it is not accepted that they are a maturely expressed and considered view and may well be influenced by what the child probably knows is the desire of the mother. The child has a loving relationship with each of her parents. While she is primarily bonded to mother, she's also demonstrating a strong bond with the father. The view expressed by Dr. L was that the continuation of the relationship with the father was in the interests of the child. The child seems to have a warm relationship with the maternal aunt with whom she has spent time, and also the maternal grandmother. The father, referring to his relationship with the child, described it as a work in progress, given his previous absence from the child's life, and saw the move of a child to Canberra as likely destructive of all that had been achieved in the rebuilding of that relationship, to which he had devoted considerable effort and which he had been accompanied by a conceded improvement in the child's behaviour. The court was of the view that the history, while perhaps some explanation for the current situation, is merely that. What is needed is a child-focused solution for this child which promotes her welfare, and I loved this phrase, not a raking over facts which hopefully will now be confined to the dustbin of history. And I think that's something that in many of the cases, not just relocation cases, affidavits with page after page of what he did or she did or said are raked up and parties aren't looking forward. And I thought that's one good line there to remember. The court went on to say that it suspected that the level of past hostility between the parties, much of the allegations and counter-allegations probably have some truth. It is, however, a matter for the court to find the way forward, and given the assurances of the party, the court is reasonably confident that each of them will get effect to the orders. And then it goes on to discuss about the effect of litigation, and we all know what detrimental effect that has on parties. But the final sort of, I suppose, persuasive factors, whereas it was the view of the expert in that given this child's vulnerabilities, and my reading of the case certainly didn't highlight any extraordinary factors which were very strong. And I think we've all seen cases where there are children with significant problems, whether it's because of the ongoing conflict between parents or whether it's the background. This case was not one of those. So I thought it was quite interesting to note that stability in this child's life was seen as really the persuasive factor. The view of the expert is, given the child's vulnerability, stability is a key requirement in her progress in life. Consequently, separation from either parent is likely to have adverse consequences for her. The orders the court makes in this matter on the evidence must be those which promote maximum stability for her. It is the view of the court that it is too great a change and too early a time to move from the present position in relation to parenting arrangements at the proposal of the father. Such a move has the potential to adversely affect the child at this time. Obviously, each case has to be taken on the circumstances and the facts at the time. And then it goes on to refer to the written submissions and the father submitting that the child developing a closer relationship with the maternal extended family, in particular grandmother and aunt, may lead to the diminishment of the father's role in the child's life. Furthermore, it was the father's position that the child had maintained those close relationships, i.e. with grandparents, with aunts, from a distance. So what he, I think, was saying is that if she moves, I'll be pushed out a bit more. They will become more domineering or dominating in her life. And the relationship with him, which had had a few difficulties, i.e. his absence, was still needing to be firmed up or worked on to get that real strength. And that she'd been able to keep a good relationship with grandma and auntie despite the difference through the usual forms. Another factor they did consider is obviously the practical difficulty in expense of the change of relationships. And even though the mother had proposed the paying for the paying for the father to come and the statement, the court said, well, she really hasn't looked closely at where they're going to stay, all those very practical problems. So despite the fact that she's prepared to dip into her own pocket, which unfortunately a lot of the parents either can't or won't, she hadn't put a very detailed proposal. May have been different if she had put, look, there's a service department 5 minutes away, etc., and gone into the details. And I think that that, in these cases, is something that you can't over-prepare them. And I think it's, you almost have to presume that you won't be allowed to go and prepare the cases like that. And then at least you can't be caught sort of on a minor detail, lacking in a minor detail. Now, they also said that there was another, other factor is the mother hadn't considered what the additional burden would be on the child and on the parent, the other parent, of the required travel. And obviously that's something that's to be considered in conjunction with the child's age. Obviously the older the child, the perhaps easier it is when they can fly alone, etc. But still it requires time, either, as we know, some kids spend hours and hours in cars travelling from one corner of Victoria to the other. But certainly air travel, things like that, it might be easy, but it's still another burden to be placed on often relatively young children. If there are behavioural problems, as I said at the start of this, then those issues perhaps accentuate the factors and accentuate the problems. Relocations cases have no real magic. They're really not cases to be looked at in a category of their own, because I say that they really raise all the issues, perhaps in a more extreme form, that you all deal with in children's cases. And I think they just highlight them. But the significant time, i.e. taking the kids to school, being there to pick them up, those sorts of matters can't be addressed by the parent or can't be experienced by the parent with the child. They're a lot more difficult if the child's relocated. And I think that is where there has been a change. There has been a shift to make it harder for parents to relocate. I'll be very interested to see what Justice Cronin has, his reasons in the recent decision. Because he's put a time limit of a year and a half before the mother can move. So it'll be interesting to see what the background for that, and I'd be more than happy to pass it on to Ed. I'll pass it on in the material I send out to you and see what happens after that. It's certainly got a bit of publicity, and I think it's one of those cases, as I said before, you can't over-prepare them. Thank you.